Just a quick note that our conversation contains some
potty talk.
Yes. Grown-up potty filth mouth talk.
Sorry.
Christian and I recently watched Mrs. Doubtfire, which I hadn't seen in a long time. And Christian, I think you knew the movie a little bit better than I did.
I'm a student of Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah. You love the
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, I love it.
Robin Williams plays that character so well, first of all, that you sort of start forgetting that Mrs. Doubtfire isn't a woman. If you watch it from that perspective...
It goes from being a fun right. family comedy to being like
dark.
A dark, erotic lesbian thriller.
Yeah.
Where this old Scottish woman becomes fixated on this family, in particular the mother of this family, and she is like nasty to this innocent man,
to the suitor. Who is like, you can't ask for a better suitor. She'll literally say things about his, I wonder if your little willy is going to get cold and invert itself into your body because you're a little...
She throws fruit at him.
Yeah.
It's so unrealistic that at some point that guy wouldn't be like, hey, Mrs. Doubtfire, why don't you go fuck off? It's enough.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
From Wondery, this is Justin Long, and you are listening to Life is Short.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
And I'm here with my brother, Christian. And you're listening to one of the first, if not the first.
It's the first day.
This is our first day. This is exciting.
This is the first time you're ever introducing...
Yeah, it's clear.
...a podcast.
Yes. Well, that's probably
so let's
clear.
Just iron out the kinks as we go.
This is a weekly interview show. We're going to be talking to actors, musicians.
All sorts of people. Some thinkers.
Artists.
Which is not to say that actors don't think.
People from all walks of life who have something to say. We're going to try to get them to say it into a microphone. Why the name Life is Short? Well, we're getting older and time is flying by. So I want to find out how other people find meaning in life and how they use their precious time, how they make the most out of it.
Most importantly, it's the pun. For everyone who doesn't understand the pun, let me spell it out. Justin Long, life is short.
Oh.
You didn't. You never put that together?
I didn't.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I mostly like it because it's a pun. It's a nice reminder, too. It's a nice sentiment to say regularly. Life is short.
We're all getting older. You're 40 now.
Yeah, not good. We've been talking about Mrs. Doubtfire. Why? Because...
Why not?
Well, yeah, because we are going to... Every episode, we're going to begin... No, I'm kidding. our guest today is Neil Patrick Harris. Neil has dabbled in the world of drag.
He is a Tony Award-winning actor for playing Hedwig.
He played Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Incredible musical. Neil and his husband, David... have a documentary coming out called Wig, which is all about Wigstock, a cultural movement that's been happening for many years in New York. And so Neil's going to talk about that. It comes out on HBO in June.
If you don't know who Neil is, he was a child actor on Doogie Howser, M.D. He also played Barney Stinson on How I Met Your Mother for all 9 seasons. And he's hosted just about every award show out there, the Emmys, the Tonys, the Oscars. He's also won awards for hosting those shows. He also does a lot of Broadway.
I hate that expression, you must be living under a rock, but I think it applies if you don't know who Neil is. And if you are living under a rock, congrats on listening to this. How are you doing that? Neil's one of the most playful, interesting, curious people I've ever known. We've had a lot of fun times with him.
And yeah, Vegas adventures. We've had
you got to tell the story about... We were in Vegas with Neil once. It was the opening of some Cirque du Soleil. We share a love of Cirque du Soleil. And so we went to one of those openings with him. And it was, I think it was Halloween, right? He was dressed up as a
zombie. Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. So we're at this outdoor, like, rooftop party. It's Halloween. And the sun has gone down. At one point, I went to the bathroom, a little drunk, came back. And I couldn't find my friends. I couldn't find the people I came with. And I'm looking all around and I'm like, oh God, where are they? And finally, I see Neil dressed immaculately in his costume. And he sees me and he approaches me really, really quickly.
Like with purpose.
With real purpose. He's about a foot and a half away from me and we're shoulder to shoulder and he looks at me. He opens his mouth as wide as you can imagine it. And he... puts both of his hands into his mouth and he, with both fingers, starts aggressively pulling out this ribbon from his mouth, and it's pulling out, and the more he does it, the faster he goes, and it's going on for so long, pulling. And I remember glancing down and seeing this little pile of ribbon sort of accumulating on the ground, and he's just looking at me, staring into my eyes, pulling this ribbon out, and I'm like transfixed by it. It probably went on for like 40 seconds, but it felt like an hour.
Oh, 40 seconds of that one.
It felt like an eternity.
That's crazy.
So he was finally done, and right when he finished, he just closed his mouth and walked away. So then, on top of already being lost and wondering where my friends were, I was like, now I need to tell this story to somebody, because if I don't tell it soon, like, no one's going to believe me that this weird thing just happened. He's like a magical person.
He's just so kind of like present and curious.
He's playful.
Playful. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Neil after this.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do-do-do-do-shaboom. Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up we'll meet again.
Have we started? Is this happening? Or are you going to wait and get a countdown?
Okay, so I guess we've started. You were born in Albuquerque. Both your parents are lawyers.
Yes.
Why you had the hesitation?
My mother went to law school. She graduated from law school. They were both attorneys, but she stopped practicing. And my dad recently sort of retired. But he still kind of does some law work.
She stopped when you were born, when she had kids?
No, she went to law school when we were like 10,
oh,
and
wow.
13 or something.
Oh my God.
And did 3 years of traveling back and forth from Albuquerque, 3 hours south to Ruidoso, where we lived every weekend for 3 years.
So were you going on auditions when you were that young?
No, I was a kid. I didn't start acting in earnest until I was, I think, 12 or 13. I was a very precocious kid in a super small town in New Mexico. So while I was in the adult Episcopal choir as a 9-year-old, and while I was in the band and the choir and sort of took over and did as much as I could, there was no theater to speak of,
but that's
even
an
in
avenue,
the town.
That's an avenue that most stars will go through, their Episcopal choir. I've heard that countless
way
times.
In.
Yeah.
It's the casting couch that never stops giving.
Yeah, well, there is.
Yes. The choir director and the band director both thought that I should maybe go to a performing arts high school. So they brought up that idea, but that felt really strange because we lived in this town. So then they said, but there is New Mexico State University in Las Cruces, and they have a week-long theater program.
Huh.
And I went for a week, and I got to go to school.
And you loved it.
I got to stay in a dorm room and learn how to play freeze tag and do cold reading audition classes. And it was probably just to get people to want to go to the college.
Yeah.
But it was helmed by a man named Mark Medoff, playwright.
Yes.
Children of a Lesser God.
Yes.
And who recently passed away, God rest his soul. And he had written this movie called Clara's Heart, based on this David Ontkean novel. Hmm. And Whoopi Goldberg was going to star in it, and it was a Warner Brothers movie. I knew none of this. But I was in the camp, and he thought I could be the other protagonist in that movie. So he asked my parents after the camp was done whether they'd feel comfortable with something like that. So they said sure, but didn't tell me because they thought he was kind of lying.
Uh-huh.
And then he sent a script from Warner Brothers Pictures, and then they told me about it. I auditioned for the movie. I ended up getting the movie. And so suddenly I was in Baltimore, Maryland, filming, co-starring with Whoopi Goldberg in a movie.
God, so is that significant a part?
Yeah, I was a co-lead in it.
And Whoopi, I mean, she's one of the most famous Whoopis.
There's Whoopi Pie. There's Whoopi Cushion. And there's Whoopi Goldberg.
Cushion's my favorite.
Is
but,
it?
Sure.
Do you like the old school one?
One
that
no.
you blow up with your mouth? Or do you like the one that self-inflates? Or do you like the
self-inflates?
Electric one?
I didn't know of the last of the latter two.
So they have one that has sort of a soft foam inside now so that you don't have to take the flattened rubber
and
cushion
stick it on the side.
And then blow it back up and then put it back under the chair. It just sort of, because there's foam inside, when you sit, it still makes the...
No kidding.
It just self-inflates. But now they have the electronic ones where you just push a button.
Of course you know about
this. And it makes a myriad of fart
sounds. Oh, really?
Fart machine?
Oh, yeah, I have it on. Yeah, I have a fart app, of course.
So that's kind of the Whoopi cushion.
That's true. That's the new... That's what the kids are going to grow up with now.
VR's Whoopi cushion.
I just introduced my nephew, who's a year and a half, to the Whoopi cushion, and I really fucked up because I popped it the first time I sat on it. So he's now... I'm so afraid that during his formative years, he's had a negative experience. His first experience with the whoopee cushion, he got really scared.
He cried.
He did. He welled up. Yeah. I mean, he's a sensitive little kid, but the I'm like, if I turn him off fart jokes, that would be the
situation. It will never happen.
Great.
Just do the armpit fart and then he'll be right back into it. Yeah. Because kids love that.
Kids love that. I mean, it's,
who doesn't?
It's still funny. You have a very playful, I would imagine you were an incredible dad, you and David. You are a magician. I mean, like, let's.
Yeah, man, I like magic.
You love magic. Do you do that with your kids? Do you?
Sort of.
Really?
I think my kids would be my least favorite audience.
Why is that?
Because you're with them all the time.
Yeah.
Magic is super good when you can come into a group that doesn't know you.
Right,
and
that's
then
true.
They don't think you're doing anything sneaky. Then you do something amazing and they never see you again. Like, that's the best.
That's true. So it would also be a lot to live up to. You're around them all the time. If you raise the bar too high, it's a lot to.
Yeah, don't pull a quarter out of your kid's ear.
Yeah, that's right.
Because that's all they can ask for the next 3 years.
Yeah, in 10 years, you're going to have to pull like 10 grand out of their ear. Did you at the time, was there a time, or do you now still struggle with insecurities about performing? When you were doing that movie, did you ever have that moments of, what the fuck am I doing?
I guess if there were any insecurities that I've had between then and now, which is ages, I would probably chalk it up to not feeling like, I don't know, I still feel sometimes like I'm 12 or 13 trying to impress high school seniors.
I think
because my life sort of took a big turn around that age. So part of my brain is still kind of there, which is nice. It keeps me feeling youthful. And, you know, I went from Clara's Heart to some weird TV movie things. Lonnie Anderson drowned me in a pool.
Oh, really?
I was Patrick Duffy's son.
In the movie or off camera?
In the movie, okay, thankfully. And then I got Doogie Howser, I was 15 turning 16.
You were that young. So that's, oh my God.
So then I didn't go to college, right? So
So
from my formative, you know, pre-puberty years on, there's been a bit of attention at me. For a while, it was like the attention I didn't love.
Yeah.
It was.
And what is that? Like, in what form would that
take? Well, because I was known as Doogie.
Yeah,
so
of course.
It was kids who were 2 years older than me who had gone through puberty who were like pointing and laughing and calling me that name.
It's also
not intentionally mean, but
no.
It was, you know, I didn't want to be known as someone else. I was proud to have worked on something, but I didn't need to be defined by that. And yet I didn't really have the anonymity to say, I'm going to be guyliner goth guy for a year.
Yeah,
I'm gonna,
you can't explore, really. You can't take on new identities or explore different.
Yeah.
Also, of all the names to be known as, it's not like the character's name was Phil or Mike.
I mean, there's something about Thunderbolt.
Yeah.
Something good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thunderbolt Howser actually would have been a really strong show.
Yeah. Doogie is such a it's iconic, but what you've done since has more than overshadowed that. Now Doogie seems like it's something you did.
It seems like a badge of honor more than anything. But by design, the name was chosen by Stephen Bochco to be a young sounding name.
Like Skippy. Or,
right. Yeah. Because the whole premise of the show was a young kid, just an actual doctor dealing with adult things. So it was Doogie Howser, MD. So the title alone sort of sold the show.
Did you ever think about, I could do this.
I could be a doctor.
Yeah.
Not really. I was just always too razzmatazz.
Yeah.
It was like a lot of jazz hands. And I really loved theme parks, going to St. Louis and going to Six Flags. And then I would go straight to see all the shows, right? And because I loved when the sets would move and when the same actors would have costume changes. I sort of like the magic trick of the theater.
Interesting.
So that always intrigued me.
Yeah.
And I didn't really want to just sit for years in college.
That makes sense.
Stuff.
That question that I asked you about, would you ever consider being a doctor? I think that's remnants of how I was introduced to you, and I knew you so well. Mm. You're one of those people, when I met you, I felt like I knew you, and yet I would say you're quite different from that character, having known you now in life a little bit. Did people ever, I mean, people must still, I guess, but certainly at the time, it must have been frustrating when people weren't able to separate you from that character.
I will say that when I was on the TV show, and it was a successful show on an ABC network, that was during a time when there weren't a lot of other television channels or options.
Sure.
So you were either in TV or you were in motion pictures.
Right, right.
It was not the crossover that exists now.
Yeah.
And so being on TV in like my late teens and looking over the fence and seeing my some of my peers being in movies, that seemed so much more legitimate. And then there was a span of time when the show was done where that dynamic still existed. And since I not only had been on a TV show and was familiar with it, but had that name sort of attached to it, it was hard to get feature film opportunities. And so that was always kind of the grass being greener over in, you know, in Tobey Maguire land.
Yeah, but you're right. That is an unfair way, a misleading way to couch a question too, to say, because
go for the drama.
Yeah, no, I know.
And also, another thing that sucked. I know. That Max Casella. Don't get me started.
Oh, by the way, Max Casella was my first
crush.
Crush. Yeah, my first impression. Oh, Doug. But. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Doug.
I can only say that word.
I love Max Casella.
He's
best.
A great actor.
He was the best part of Doogie Howser, M.D.
Yeah.
He was, I think, 7 or 8 years older than I was.
Oh, he was?
Yeah,
really?
Older, but played much younger. So therefore, his comedic timing was stellar. And I just felt bad for him more than myself because I was Doogie and got that a lot. But I played him and I was kind of the nucleus of the show, and it must have been complicated for him post show because he still looked very much like Vinny, and he probably got a little like a lot of "Hey, Vinny, where's Doogie?" And he was probably over that. He must fucking have hated me for a decade.
Yes. I don't know where he is. Stop it. Hey, Doug,
I'm not crawling through your window. Back away.
And you are now, as was he, you are known. Now you have a recognizable face. How does that, what were the bonuses of that and what were the limitations?
Back then?
Yeah.
I could get into clubs really in LA without any kind of fake ID or anything.
And did you do that?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would flirt with Drew Barrymore's mom.
Oh, really? You flirted with Jade?
Yeah, we'd flirt with Jade to get into the club.
Oh, yes. Are you being serious?
Super serious, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So you must
I did way more partying when I was 19 and 20. Then I had a fake ID. My friend Chuck got me a good fake ID over in downtown L.A. Uh-huh. It was like $50. Very exciting. I didn't need it because I was a kid on a TV show, and I think it was it's like when Webster would come in, you know, Emmanuel Lewis would be in the corner. It was like, there's Neil Patrick Harris over in that side. Who would let me in to think I didn't look like I was 21 until I was about 34.
Right. Yeah. You were a young kid.
I was a young looking kid.
What was your fake ID name?
No, it was my own name. It was Thunderbolt Harris.
Oh, you're good.
So weird.
MD.
No. So I did a lot of drinking and a lot of like young Hollywood partying. And then you wound up, you know, then you're in there and the music's super loud and you saw these same fucking people yesterday.
Yeah. What was the craziest thing you saw? I mean, was there ever a night where you were like, oh my God, I'll never forget this. I'm glad I did this tonight.
There were sexual escapades that were fun in that world.
That you witnessed.
That was a part of.
That you were a part of.
Yeah. Myself and 1, 2, 3, 4 of us all fooled around simultaneously with the mother of another friend of ours.
Okay.
And so while that was happening, which was really kind of bizarre, then her hotel room door opened up and then her girlfriend came in and she started screaming at us because we were with her girlfriend who was our friend's mom.
So this is Nev Campbell and Shannon Elizabeth.
No, but it was that time.
It was that time.
Those were fun times.
At this time, are you, again, a different time, but are you paranoid about being outed for your sexuality? I mean, are you worried
about that
at this time?
I was worried at that time more about being sort of typecast.
Yeah,
so I was interested in... And I think I'm very happy that I worked early on that show because it sort of gave me a lifelong fuel to keep diversifying myself.
Yeah.
Which I think is a valuable career thing to do.
And rare to be able to do.
I just didn't want to only be in TV, right? As I said before, I wanted to be in movies. So then I was done with TV, wasn't getting into movies, and I loved the theater.
Yeah.
So I went and did more theater stuff. And so that was a very cool thing, an entrance into that. And then I started then doing movies and then the hosting stuff. So I've been sort of balancing lots of, I've been plate spinning a lot.
And these things kept building because, I mean, I think.
But you want to get to the sex. You want to get to the blowjobs. Yeah, like, that's like all you want to talk about right now.
Who was your first, which cast member of Party of Five was your favorite person to make out with? When you're getting into plays, was that because, I mean, obviously you have a talent, but how did you build that empire? How did you...
When I did Clara's Heart, they all got to go to Jamaica at the end of the movie because part of it was filmed in Jamaica and my character wasn't in the Jamaica scenes. So they were all excited to go to Jamaica. The producer, Marty Elfond, lovely guy, instead, since they were all going to Jamaica, flew my parents, myself to New York City. And so we got to go on our own little trip, which was just very sweet of them. And we saw Les Miserables on the big Broadway. And was a show that I knew very well because back in that camp I went to for a week, I was introduced to the soundtrack of Les Mis. And then I saw that show and I just couldn't believe that that many talented people could be on a stage that moved in a circle and the giant barricade would appear.
Yeah.
And it was overwhelming.
I remember that feeling.
And I just loved that happened six times nights a week.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to do that. So I would come every hiatus period that we had with my extra money because I was on a TV show, and I would come to New York and I would see 12 shows in 10 days and then I'd go back.
Were you salivating to get out there and do that?
Dying to do that, yeah. But then when the show was done, I realized that one of the drawbacks of doing a television show for more than a couple years, at least a single camera one, where it's filmed like a movie, is that you learn how to not move at all really well.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you move left and go sit in the chair, they have to light a bigger part of the room. And so I got really good at sort of walking into a room and walking to my mark without looking down and then standing perfectly still.
Yeah.
So the show was done and I was like, what do I do with my arms?
Move.
How am I supposed to sit?
That's interesting. Yeah.
Put my hands in my pocket? Behind my back.
Yeah.
Like I was very kind of awkward. That's why I did the theater as well. Because I thought, that's full body.
Do you watch reality shows? Do you ever watch like The Bachelor?
Not the romantical ones, but the survivory ones.
There's this one called 90 Day Fiancé. On TLC.
God.
It's incredible. I won't go on about it. Time is limited. But it's interesting to watch self-conscious people who aren't used to being on camera do what they do with their hands. And this guy was, you know, that like kind of nerdy thing where they stick just their fingers in their pockets.
Sure. And the rest of their hand, you're sort of laying out.
Yes. And it's sort of like hanging by the side. But there's that self-consciousness that
I'm still that way on carpets, on step and repeats when you're at a premiere of
absolutely.
Something. What do you do? If you're wearing a suit, what do you do?
Pockets. I'm committed to my pockets.
But with a suit, you have the suit jacket on, right?
Oh,
so that
God.
Means that the suit jacket's built like bunched up.
I got to tell you, it is making me it's so comforting to know that this is something that goes through your mind too, that
it's
you struggle
time.
With. Oh, that's so, I would never have guessed that.
I sort of doing the hand, like the light hand clasp and then maybe like adjusting my cuffs. Pose.
Oh, you do that.
Maybe I'm just mid buttoning the jacket, that pose.
But when you're doing that, it's to do something, right?
It's just to keep my hands busy.
Yeah. Oh my. Or pointing, pretending you see somebody. You ever do that one? Look at that guy.
Oh, hey, there's a guy over there.
Yeah.
Or the double fingers like a gun. Like, hey, buddy.
I'm glad I've never done that. Well, they yell at you and they say, give me a peace. They're really into peace signs. Give me a smile. That's so good to know that you do that. When was Cabaret? And how important was that, doing that role? And what
Cabaret was super great. So Cabaret ran on Broadway and Alan Cumming did it. Initially at Studio 54, that they had, the Roundabout had taken over that property. So Studio 54 already came with this great horny vibe.
Yeah.
And then that show was super randy and exciting and won all the Tonys. And it was very awesome. I had done Rent before that. I was in the first,
speaking of
the
horny
second,
vibes.
Second national tour of Rent that did La Jolla and then Los Angeles. So I sort of liked alt theater.
Yeah.
I'd bleached my hair blonde and was, you know, wearing thrift store clothes and stuff. Cabaret had been running for a bit and they asked if I wanted to be the MC. So I replaced the much sought after Raul Esparza. And I did it for a while. I did it with Deborah Gibson. And I did it with Molly Ringwald before
That's right.
I don't think that you could do that show today because there were very few rules.
Post Me Too.
It was a very pre-Me Too show.
Yeah.
But it was great because I lived in New York. I was able now to be anonymous because in New York, no one gives a shit about what you're thinking about or doing at all. I got to be the MC, and in being the MC in cabaret, I colored my hair jet black, like a blue black. My armpits were dyed black. My happy trail.
I saw it. You were amazing. It was incredible.
It was very androgynous.
Yeah.
And very sexual.
Yeah.
So you could do, as the MC, especially anything. Like you could just, and the ensemble were musicians.
It's true.
And I could literally just walk around and sit on someone's lap in the audience.
Wow.
And like grab their tit.
Yeah.
And then like go up and walk around and like sort of give guy a hand job while I suck on his neck yeah. while he's playing a saxophone yes. and then not, and then push him away.
This is Sound of Music.
yeah. No, but that truly. And yeah. I had never in my life, A, been in a role that would allow that.
Sure.
B, I never thought of myself as a person who would be allowed that. But with that comes sort of a sexual
swagger,
horny swagger yeah. that you have to own. Because if you
sure.
act shocked at what you're doing, yeah. that isn't effective.
And they'll see through it. I mean, I would imagine. I would imagine an audience, especially like a Broadway, like post Allen coming, they will know if you're not owning it.
It's the best thing about doing theater
yeah.
is that you can sort of fake it, but you're doing it in repetition enough times that you really have
you.
To do it.
Yeah.
So it's like Hedwig I did, which was in complete drag. I mean, transgender drag.
Yeah.
And I had never, ever even walked in heels before I did that. I had to then not only be confident as a woman, but like well past insecurities of it, because she was old and had been doing that for years and years.
Of course.
that was the tricky God. Acting thing.
How did you do that? How did you literally just walk around? You just got, I mean, did you?
We befriended Willem Belli, who was a drag, RuPaul's Drag Race all-star, was on season 2, got kicked off. He's still amazing and a friend. And that was after when How I Met Your Mother was ending, and we just went in the rehearsal room, and he brought some wigs and heels and taught me how to walk on. It's tricky.
Now these are also parts that kind of transcend specific type of sexuality, heterosexuality, homosexuality. Was there ever a concern that, as there may have been after Doogie Howser, I'm going to be seen in this light, I'm now going to be seen in this light?
I think I was more afraid of that when that was worth being afraid of, which was, I think, 4 or 5 years before.
Oh,
I
mean, okay.
Like
yeah.
pre-Ellen coming out on TV.
This is now who you are.
There was a big glass ceiling that no one had broken through.
Yeah.
And so everyone, I think, was concerned that it may affect future job opportunities. And back then it probably did.
Yeah.
In the same way
sure.
that being on TV meant that you didn't get to be in movies.
Totally.
So I think I was kind of just guarded as a performer because I didn't want to commit too much and accidentally reveal too much.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had this sort of intrinsic, internalized kind of homophobia about what it meant if your legs were crossed this way versus this way, or how people would take it if you were sitting and your wrist was not perfectly straight.
Yeah.
I mean, I just spent a lot of time processing all of that.
Yeah,
so
interesting.
Getting to play something that was hypersexual was great. And my coming out happened during How I Met Your Mother.
Where you're playing this very, I mean, he's such a, he is
super
such a straight
player.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Straight, but fun and
yeah.
like down with anything and made out with
totally.
80-year-olds and dogs.
Very and, sexual, very hypersexualized. And this is how so much of America is now absorbing you in this capacity. They're seeing this character. And so I think that
it's kind of the bro.
Totally. I see you sometimes at those Heineken commercials are like, that's a bro-y kind of like,
yep.
Demographic that is meant, that's
I was for. Very pleased that I was doing, I was accepted by that demographic.
Yeah.
When all of the coming out happened.
Well, I think it also did a lot for the gay community. I think it was a huge thing that happened to coincide, that role. The timing of your coming out, because, you know, it's like, I think it probably dispelled a lot of myths about what gay performers are. Here you are convincingly playing this kind of guy to a mass audience. And so, you know, it didn't really matter. I mean, that's what I think it probably said to a lot of people.
The fun thing about having done the MC in Cabaret, where he was intentionally like omnisexual.
Yeah.
The fun thing
like
about
snake.
Being
like
super,
reptilian.
Super horny and Harold
yeah.
and Kumar. The fun
that's
thing about
right.
being nasty as Hedwig and super bro guy horny wingman in How I Met Your Mother is
right.
that what I think is fun is just being flirty.
Yeah.
Like I feel like
yeah.
everyone likes to be flirty.
Sure.
and to be flirted.
Do you miss being able to do that? I mean, you say that cabaret
is amazing.
You know, but I'm saying after
I still do it a ton.
But something like cabaret, you say like, and I agree with you. I don't think you can do that right now. I think that might
cabaret
be really...
was nasty just because I looked crazy, so I could be on the subway and people were kind of scared of me. So there's a danger element to it that was
sure.
Cool. But what I think is fun now is that I think that most comfortable straight guys are flattered when a gay guy, I'm not saying flirts with him in a way that like trying to like blow him in a bathroom stall or something, right. But saying that they're handsome or complimenting them feels good. Like I love telling women that their bodies look great or that they look great.
Bradley
because
Cooper.
People want to hear that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to say, oh, thanks, but you're gay, so I'm not going to take that compliment.
Yeah, I don't internalize
in
it.
In a weird way, they almost
I prefer compliments more. From gay men.
For sure.
Yeah, you know what you're talking about. But Bradley Cooper, Bradley does that more better than anyone. He'll say, God, buddy, you look so good. You know, and I find myself getting a little flush.
Like oh, Bradley
said, please. Christian will tell
my
you.
Oh, stars.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think so? I really take it to heart.
I really enjoy the fluidity of it. And if there's anything I can do as someone in the sort of LGBTQ world in an agendaed way, it would be someone who lives by example and is very, I try to be very covert in the acceptance that I can create. It's not something that I would boast about, it's something that I acknowledge. I get to go every year to Disney World and do something called the Candlelight Processional, where it's for the holidays. They have a celebrity come to Epcot Center to the American Pavilion. and they read the story of Jesus at a pulpit in front of a full orchestra, the Disney choir, the Voices of Liberty, and four children's choirs. So there's probably 250 people on stage.
Oh, wow.
And people, and they do it three times a night, and people queue up for hours.
No kidding.
And it's free, but you have to queue up for it.
Huh.
And I've done it for like 11 years.
Wow.
And it's not lost on me that that I get to start the show with some opening remarks, and I can talk about what I did today with my husband and my kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And that doesn't freak people out too much. And then I tell the story of Jesus and the birth of Jesus. And so it's not heavy handed. I'm not trying to be ironic about it, but I'm very appreciative that I'm in a unique, weird opportunity sometimes to potentially create conflict within people who feel very black and white about something. To say, well, he as much as I think he's a sodomite and a sinner, and they're all going to go to hell.
Really entertained.
He was really good telling the story of Jesus. Like I remember, I'll remember this for the rest of my life.
It's too bad in the afterlife I won't be able to watch him perform because he'll be riding in hell.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up, we'll meet again.
Have you ever played anyone super gay?
Yeah. Yeah, quite. In fact, I was just going to say, I just talked to a journalist about this. I was about a play that I had just done, and he said, you know, where I was playing a real toxic male. I mean, I was the epitome of toxic masculinity.
What was the play?
It was called Do You Feel Anger at the Vineyard. And this guy was, it was an absurdist thing about male-female dynamics in the workplace. And I was playing a guy who was really just like a primate almost. I mean, he was he acted purely on id and wanted a, you know, a version of what you got to do in cabaret.
Grabbing
tits and jerking guys off. I wish I'd, you know.
Wait, you were gay and?
No. He was, but just in terms of overt sexuality, grabbing. But I was talking to this journalist about what are those rules now? I mean, because we're redefining these things and we're kind of drawing certain boundaries that we hadn't established before. What do you think the rules are in terms of, or should there be in terms of straight actors playing gay men, gay actors playing, you know, he had suggested that now it might not be as cool for a straight actor to play a gay role. And I wondered.
It's a tricky conversation for sure.
Yeah.
I think that all should be allowed.
Yeah.
The gay community will eat themselves alive because they like to talk shade about their, you know, about their own. And so that's its own tricky thing. Because if a straight guy plays a gay guy, then certain people will be offended. Well, there's tons of gay guys that aren't getting roles, so why not give that to a gay guy?
Right.
But what then, like straight guy, he's not allowed to ever play a gay part? So
I know, it starts to unravel a little bit.
I'm a big fan of the lack of rigidity. So I'm very appreciative that we live in a world now where the fluidity of the scale is not so black and white, so to speak.
Yeah.
That our kids are 8 years old and growing up in New York City with all kinds of diversity around them at school, in their home life. And therefore, we don't have to say, no, you need to play with dolls.
It'd be hypocritical.
No, you need to play with this.
I'm
super happy with all. I'm happy with their happiness.
Yeah, yeah.
So if a straight guy is nailing a part and really wants to do this and go for it, that'd be great.
And it'd be hypocritical for you who played a man with a 1-inch penis. It's common knowledge you have an 11-inch penis.
Well, that's common knowledge.
Well, it should be
for those that were crying about it. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, yeah, I know the 1-inch dick acting community was very upset about some of them, your performance. You talked a little bit about it, having to learn how to walk like a woman. I saw you in that part, and it was transformative and hypersexual, like an aggressive, like in your face sexuality that was. Palpable.
Is this the part where we make out?
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is right before we make out.
Okay, good, good, good.
I'm leading up to the making.
Let me get a Listerman strip.
You are now, this is a great segue for a show that I will be pleasuring myself to. you and David are producing a documentary about Wigstock. Can you talk a little bit about that? It's called Wig.
It's closing the Tribeca Film Festival. It's very exciting. So Wigstock is a drag festival that was started 25 years ago or something by an amazing drag queen named The Lady Bunny, a drag performer with early RuPaul. And she was performing at the Pyramid Club and stuff. And they decided, hey, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, we're all wasted. Let's go to Tompkins Square Park where they have this sort of outdoor amphitheater kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. And we'll just put on a show. Mm-hmm. And then it caught on and they started doing them every year. And it suddenly became a real outlet for drag and counterculture back in the
late 20 years ago.
Yeah. Early 90s. And then thousands of people were seeing it. And they did it up until 2000, right when the Twin Towers fell. And they were supposed to do one that year, but the vibe wasn't right. And so she just kind of stopped. David, husband, we were watching Drag Race because we're fans of that show. And David said, why don't they do Wigstock anymore? Hmm. And I said, that's a fantastic question. This would be a great time to do it. Acceptance has never been higher in the drag world. And he said, we should do it. And I said, do you know Lady Bunny? He said, no, we can find her. Mm-hmm. And so he reached out to Bunny. Bunny didn't have a good reason why she had stopped doing it. And so we got her to say yes, and then cut to a year and a half later of us, you know, figuring it out. But we did it at the top of South Street Seaport over Memorial Day. And it was unbelievable. It was 8 hours of drag performances.
God. You hosted it?
No, Bunny hosted it. Okay. I did Hedwig. In the later part of the show. But it was 8 hours.
God.
It was 50 plus performers.
And that the documentary is about you guys putting it back together?
It's two things. So it's about the recreation of and the history of Wigstock and what it meant then when it started. And then what it has become now. And then we cross that with sort of what the drag gay culture is on the East Coast now. Because now it's more gender fluid.
I bet,
there's a lot of, you know, transpositive stuff that's happening with it. We follow a woman named Charlene Incarnate, who's fully trans. And part of her act is dancing and then taking her clothes off. And you see her naked breasts and also her penis.
Yeah.
And it's kind of empowering and strange, but amazing. And so it sort of follows that culture of a younger,
the younger group
and the older brigade coming together. But I don't know. I just always loved having done Hedwig. I always thought, as much as I love RuPaul's Drag Race and I still watch it.
Yeah.
Watched it last night, as a matter of fact. I recognized, and David was very smart in saying this, that we only see them performing when they're about to be kicked off the show, lip sync for your life, and they're only singing a song that's been chosen for them by the producers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so they're singing a song that's chosen for them. So they're really not getting to showcase what they do best. And I thought, no, you know what? We should film this, and we should do a documentary of it. And I want to do this in a place, in a way, that these queens, who are all individually so fascinating and fabulous and filled with ferocity, a ferociousness and a power, and yet kind of tragic and ratchet and beat up at the same time, just by design, shaving their their stubble in order to put on pancake makeup, covering their hairy eyebrows,
fighting
with glue to make themselves look more femme. I want them to be recognized doing what they do best. I want them to have their
in
3 minutes
in their element
living. And I think documenting that, which we did, where you're seeing people in front of thousands now in a gorgeous setting outside, like lip syncing or singing and living and sweating. I don't know. I just thought.
Yeah, the real, seeing the pores.
Attention must be paid.
Assassins.
Having done it.
This is a part you played.
Yeah.
Also brilliant.
And I'm really pleased with the end result.
Yes, queen.
Yes.
Have
you ever done drag?
The closest I came was I did a little part in the breakup where I wore heels and a wig, kind of like a fabulous long wig.
But were you supposed to be?
No, he was kind of
uncomfortable in the walk and everything.
No, he was supposed to be comfortable, which is why I shot most of my stuff sitting down, because it really was difficult.
That was very difficult for me.
I saw Hedwig shortly after I did that, and I remember really having an appreciation for how difficult that must have been, because it is fucking hard. I still see when I see women walking in high heels.
Walking in high heels, but I think everyone has their own inner intrinsic homophobia about themselves.
Yeah, huh?
But not everyone. That's not true. Not accurate. But I think a majority
of
guys
feel
like if they put on heels and they cock a hip, and then they drop a shoulder and they kind of sass themselves up, that if they're too good at it too quickly, if they sissy that walk too well too fast, that it might mean something. And if they're really gawky and uncomfortable, it might mean something. And I meant something to me.
Yeah.
I'm 100% gay.
Yeah.
But even doing that, even when I was walking and learning how to do it, I was sweating and so like clammy,
really?
Because it
your
just,
body wasn't used.
My body was not okay with.
It's almost like your body's homophobic.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was
That's
very crazy, and I had to get well past that.
It's funny. That hasn't been an issue for me.
Really?
My body was like, this is natural. This is what you're supposed to be.
That's hot.
Yeah. But I know, I think that is true of a lot of men, that if they're, you know, there's that phrase, no homo. You don't hear it a lot anymore, but like, yo, no homo, bro. But I hear that before a lot. That's prefaced a lot of compliments. Not that I get paid a lot of compliments, but when guys say, you know, I want to take, can we take a picture? Like, I like that thing you did. It's often prefaced with, hey, no homo. but can we take a photo?
Yeah, that's such a weird thing to say. And that's their ownism.
Yeah, exactly. Why?
Because who cares? Kind of fun about being gay and having the same guy ask me for a picture. They don't say no homo because they would feel like it'd be offensive.
But you probably feel them putting on like more, yo, bro, you know, there may be pushing a little bit about this is not. Just so there's nothing misleading about this, you know.
I guess I don't get that very often. I'm very appreciative of being raised and becoming an adult in the age that I have been.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad I was born in 73. Yeah. I'm glad that we're at a place in our world now where people feel less obliged to be only known as a singular thing.
Yes. And
I met a lot of really, really alpha male straight guys that really want to take a selfie with me, knowing that I'm gay and being super cool, not having to like say, qualify. Hey, my girlfriend.
Exactly. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. That's funny. That's interesting. I mean, that's good. That's great. And in fact,
many hand jobs.
I bet. I mean, that's like, why you do it.
Countless.
That's why you got into this. That's why that week in, you know.
I can count them on one hand if you catch the comedy.
Oh, I do. Oh, comedy is not lost here. I mean, it is for the most part. Speaking of comedy, there's so
Was that
many...
enough gay talk for you?
Well, no. You know, in fact, I wanted to tell you, speaking of the drag circuit, is drag queen's inappropriate word still drag queen?
Queen, yeah. Queen's great.
Queen's great.
I say like it.
Yeah, like, no, you're in the
tour. I don't
perform
drag as for a living, but I think queens are fine.
Do you remember that bar on First and First called Waikiki Wally's?
No.
Waikiki Wally's was like a tiki bar right next door to that karaoke drag bar called Lucky Chang's.
Oh, cool.
Lucky Chang's. And the first time I ever said I was an actor out loud was at Lucky Chang's. We would go.
That's cool.
You get all liquored up. You'd have a zombie, one of those like drinks they pour all the everything into and the flaming. And then you'd go through the kitchen to Lucky Chang's. And I was doing a show with Ed, the show Ed that you did an episode of.
I did.
And we were all there. And we hadn't been on the air yet, and the hostess for the show was Anita Cocktail.
No.
And she was just surly and fierce, and I signed up, and I went up to sing, and she goes, "You're cute, honey. What's your name?" And I said, it's Justin. And she goes, "And what do you do for a living?" And I said, "Well," and I looked at my castmates, and I was like, I'm an actor. And she goes, "So am I, dear. I'm an actress. So what restaurant do you work at?" And I said, "Well, you know, I don't work at a restaurant anymore. I'm actually an actor, just an actor." And she goes, "Yeah, and where else do you work?" And I said, I got really nervous. And she said, "You know what? I have a friend who refuses to say that he's an actor, and he refuses to say what restaurant he works at, and I'm an actress, and I work here, and I'm proud of it, and you should be too." And she tossed me the microphone.
Oh, that's a great introduction.
Yeah, and I had to get
crush it?
Jesse is a friend. Oh, it's been interesting. Just staring daggers at me off. But that was my introduction to the New York City's drag community. But I want to be reintroduced, and actually, the documentary is in June. Right? Mm-hmm. Wig is in June. Do you mind if we do some really quick questions?
I don't, but I have a question for you in the sort of gay fluidity question. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's something I've been asking a lot of straight guys because I'm very confused by it.
Yeah, yeah, please.
So you like blowjobs. You like receiving a blowjob.
Fans of the show will know that is very true.
I would assume that would be the case because you have an outie. And when you have an outie instead of an innie, it seems like you just want to put it places. I'm guessing.
Yeah, I do. And I like putting it places.
Warm places, even better, right?
I like warm places, warm, humid places.
So, given that a cleanliness is assumed,
yeah,
do you like to have a lot of tongue down on your butt?
Tongue on the butt?
Or like finger in the butt, in the butt?
Well, that assumption is, that's a big assumption for me because
A big assumption.
Yes.
Go on.
Because I don't know if I ever feel that clean. I mean, clean enough to really be comfortable with that.
With a tongue in your butt.
Wait, hold on one second. Mom, Pa, Grandma Jody, turn this off now. Maybe post shout. Maybe if
in
I were
the
like
gay world, I just assume that
because you do a lot of maintenance down there.
To take care of myself, sure. You got to manscape. You got to look your best.
I don't do as much.
That's disrespectful.
Like, yeah,
I'm surprised that with straight guys, it's that, you know, yes, you can go this far.
Uh-huh. But like, why not just a couple more centimeters? It's right
there's
there.
A real taint threshold with the straight guys.
The taint of Gibraltar. Yeah, I mean, why would you? You're right. I mean, it doesn't really make as much sense, except the ass is not a focal point in my, you know, in that.
Interesting.
Experience. It's not just not a focal point. Wait, but what was your question about that? About why?
I'm just confused as to why why it, when you're enjoying something physically that's pleasurable, why if you like someone down that far,
why limit yourself?
Then it feels like it's almost homophobic in its own way. Like if I like that too much, does that mean something? I'm not saying that you feel that way.
No,
but I was surprised. I was having a conversation with somebody else about that, and I was like, really?
That's interesting. You're right. Now you've given me food for.
Do you want me to pause for like 3 seconds so we can, when that gets edited out, you can then start it in with your questions again?
I think that's interesting. Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 do,
shaboom. Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over. Because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled babbel.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up, we'll meet again.
Okay, quick questions. If you could give 20-year-old Neil really solid advice, you sit him down for like 30 seconds, what would you say?
I would tell him that the decisions that he would make that he was most concerned about had little consequence as long as he made them in a thoughtful way.
Mm-hmm.
I was very concerned about what other people would think.
Yeah.
In life, the moral of the story for me is to leave a wake behind you that is as small as possible.
Yeah.
It's not like you have to be super nice to everybody.
No, I know what you mean.
But if you don't like something, you don't have to say that you like it all the time. You know, you don't want to have ill intentions. As long as you're authentic, I feel like you can pretty much do whatever you want to.
I'm still learning that. I look back at some of the time that I've wasted in indulging in that behavior, and I really regret it. You know, I've been thinking about the name of the show is Life is Short, and I think about how best to use this time, the precious time that we have left. And I think that's a really, that's such a great lesson.
For teenagers that want to make out with the girl or the guy that they're with, you know, you don't just start making out with someone because they could be really upset by that.
Yeah.
But you can ask them.
Employ a little empathy.
Sure.
And just inject a little bit. What is your most commonly used emoji on your phone?
Oh, probably the rose emoji. My mother and I, when we text each other, always end with a double rose or multiple roses. It's just like our sort of thing.
That's
I also
really
like
sweet.
The eggplant and the three water drops.
And you get the cherries in front of that and you get the whole package.
Oh, or a peach.
Or a peach,
depending on.
Yeah, or just a nice face after the water drops.
Oh.
Depending on what you want to say.
Yeah, there's also, there's
or this guy.
Eggplant and then the three water drops and then there's sort of the smiley face, but it's like dripping down the side of the mouth. That's the facial trifecta.
The facial emoji.
Facial emoji is my favorite.
Or this one. If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play?
Oh, wow. That's a really cool question. Can I ask your intention behind the question?
I think it's sports.
Sport do you like to play, or do you, how would you make the most money?
How do you see your fantasy self in an athletic, in a physical way, I suppose?
I would probably be a gymnast.
Ah, yeah.
Or a diver or something.
Yeah,
where I had,
yeah. Was Greg Louganis a moment for you? Was that somebody that you saw and you were like, I remember that he was one of the first gay figures that I remember.
I just remember him hitting his head on the board and that being so terrible.
But he was so impressive.
My takeaway from Greg Louganis, and I've never really met him, but it seemed that he was really concerned about being public about his own life. It seemed that, and I can't speak to the sports world at all, and I can only imagine that back then that would have been a big deal, even more so than acting. But I remember, when I think of him, I remember it feeling conflicted, as if he didn't want to have to say it, and once he, I don't know.
Do you smoke? Are you a stoner? Or you have
I'm loving the edibles and the vaping. Yeah. I'm not a big bong joint kind of guy, because if I smoke too much pot, then I'm insecure and I'm not sharp, and I kind of like improv-y dialogue. I think that's fun. So I tend to smoke pot by myself when everyone's gone to sleep.
Relax.
And I have things I need to fix or build or put together.
And so you get snacky, and when you do get snacky, if you do, what's your go-to?
Reese's peanut butter cups all day.
And not Reese's pieces. You need the chocolate with it.
No, the very specific Reese's peanut butter cups straight away. The Reese's eggs are good. The Christmas trees are excellent.
Yeah.
But any chunky or with pieces in them or white chocolate, not so much.
Okay.
I will probably eat 6 or 7 a night.
No shit.
I did last night.
Really?
Really. And then the next day I'll say, this is ridiculous, man. You're in good shape.
You're in good shape.
I go to the gym and I have children. And then at night I will sit and watch Game of Thrones and I will like bring with me.
But isn't that important?
7 or 8 Reese's peanut butter cups, and I will eat them all.
But don't you need that? Don't you need that balance? I mean, wouldn't life? That's life. It's a great part of life.
Or nacho cheese Doritos. Those are really good too. What's yours?
See, I prefer Cool Ranch, but the nacho.
The breath issue with the Cool Ranch.
Yeah, they do have kind of a strange pizza flavored goldfish. I'll just tear through.
Really?
Or Pepperidge Farm Chessmen, those butter cookies.
Oh, those are great.
Christ almighty. Favorite movie of all time?
But,
and I know you love Willy Wonka.
I would say Clue.
Really? No, Martin Mull?
Wow. I love...
Clue. There is a magical element to that, right? Isn't there like a sort of a Victorian...
I've always been a fan of improvish comedy. Mm-hmm. So Guffman close second. And I've always loved the murder mystery. My mom grew up with Agatha Christie in every one of those. So I'm a big fan of murder mystery tropes. And I love immersive theater stuff. And I'm a big fan, when I'm making content, of having it be a little off structure.
Oh.
I love Sleep No More.
Oh,
I love Cirque du Soleil.
Yes.
I love The Magic Castle.
Yes.
So Clue, the movie, had 3 different endings that you could go to see in the 80s. And you didn't know. It would say ending A or ending B or ending C. And you would have to go see the movie 3 times. To see, you know, all 3 of the multiple endings. And it was absolutely hilarious.
Have you done a murder? Have you done something like that?
Well, as a matter of fact,
yes.
I am an early stuff with
unintentional
Elizabeth Banks's company, Brownstone. We're working on, I'm going to be writing and directing a murder mystery improv comedy movie.
The Untitled Sounding Project.
The title is Murder Mystery Manor Murder.
Oh, wow.
With an exclamation point at the end.
My, oh, my.
You'll get a call.
I'm excited for that.
Thank
to
you.
Be in it. your favorite Muppet?
Oh, man. Kermit.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the one I relate to the most. It seems like an easy answer, and I know a lot of the Muppets. Gonzo's great. Fozzie's comedy's hilarious. Piggy
of
kick
course.
Somebody is awesome.
And just such a performer.
Frank Oz's stuff was really brilliant.
What about Bob, Dirty Rotten Scoundrel? I love him.
He's amazing.
Oh, I have a good one for you.
Superpower? Is it a superpower question?
Yeah, X-ray vision or super hearing?
I'd go X-ray vision. I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because I would go into the insecure place with the super hearing.
I don't want to hear shit about myself.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you don't do you read reviews? Do you look at internet
I do.
Stuff?
I read all of it.
You do?
I do.
But
I
hosted
the Oscars, and that was a really exciting time and an exciting night. And then it was met with almost uniformly negative response, and that was an intriguing divide for me because I felt like it was going well while it was
it's
happening.
It's funny. I remember, I thought the opposite.
After it was done, I went and read everything that everyone said, and it was really bad, which I think happens in the Oscars. Because of that, I just don't want to go. I want that experience to live on in my mind as a positive one.
Of course.
But that said, I think it's, for me, it's important to have the information and be able to process it.
You know, if you're around too much, there's oversaturation.
For sure. Yeah. Well, like probably with the Apple commercials.
Totally.
People fucking love the Apple commercials.
Yeah.
But not annoyed by them. But then at what point is it...
Of course. And we get it. He's the Mac, he's the
PhD. And then
the same.
Suddenly you're not sure.
Totally.
But I'd rather have the information and then be able to say to myself, okay,
yeah,
people are not going to like it. People are going to like it. But now I sort of know where I stand within it.
You're lucky. You're better
at
processing
it. If I had a superpower, I would be able to stop time and move freely within it. I think it's the best one.
Oh, yeah. And if you could stop time in your own life, if you could go back to the future style, you had a DeLorean, you hit 88 miles per hour, where do you go?
In my own life or anywhere?
Yeah. Both. I'm curious about anywhere.
In my anywhere I'd go to, turn of the century, probably 1900, New York, maybe.
Like ragtime kind
of. With one of those old-time magicians.
If you could be one age for the rest of your life.
45 years old. My exact year right now.
Really?
I feel like I'm in my best physical shape.
It's so good to know.
I spent a lot of time, and I think it was because of the scrutiny when I was younger.
Yeah.
Or the self-imposed idea of scrutiny from others.
Yeah.
Thinking
that
people were watching me when they really probably weren't.
Well, I'm sure they may have. That. I mean, it's understandable.
And so if even one did, I would probably have thought, oh, they're, see, people are watching.
I've gone to a crowded club with you. I've had the experience of being in your wake behind David. Christian and I were walking behind you guys, and the heads that were turning were unlike nothing I had seen up until that point.
Wait, Vegas?
With a few exceptions. Yeah.
Vegas is crazy.
Yeah.
Vegas is weird for some reason. I get recognized a lot in Las Vegas. I don't know why it seems like people watch that show. But anyway, because of that, I've still been conscious of my posture, conscious of like feeling complete in my own skin.
Yeah. Well,
only as of recently now, and I think being a dad has a lot to do with that because you're less narcissistic. You're more
Living for
empathetic.
Somebody else.
Yeah. And you're observing them. I feel like my posture's better. My flexibility's better when I'm at stasis.
Yeah.
And I'm just not thinking about it.
Right.
How am I existing physically?
Yeah.
Cause even still, like when I get, one of the things I hate is saying like too many times, and I realize that I'm saying it a lot. So I apologize.
I
recognize that in stasis, I'll have not like hunched over posture. And so I spend a lot of time like correcting my own posture. It has nothing to do with straight or gay or masculinity or anything. It's just I don't want to have a hump.
I'm like one of the guys, I'm like the middle of the evolutionary man. Yes. Like I'm like the third guy in who's...
But then people say you have good posture, Neil, and then I think that's fantastic.
You
but
do.
I don't feel like I do.
That's...
So I guess now at 45, I feel more in control of who I am. I really want to be a Cirque du Soleil performer.
Well,
or a Sleep No More performer. I've fantasized about doing Sleep No More for a couple months.
You could, my God.
You have to take a good 3 weeks to learn all the dancing stuff, and that's a very physical show. There's lots of two-person dances that involve slamming each other onto pool tables and doing roles, and it's a very physical show.
What was the thing that, I mean, you mentioned the Oscars. Walk me through how you feel you're about to host the Oscars. What is your bathroom routine? What are you saying to yourself? Are you looking in the mirror? Are you maniacally going over lines? How do you feel? Does your stomach hurt?
Right before the show starts, I feel pretty calm because it's about to happen. It's the dress rehearsal the day before when you're running through your jokes and there's no audience laughing and you've got all these things planned and you're not sure how they're going to go. That's really,
see, like,
that's like
guys.
Bad stand-up.
Yeah.
That's the tricky point. I like the opening numbers. I've done the Emmys where it's all TV, but the Oscars is the movies. So I thought, let's do an opening number that would be inclusive of technology in movies. Yeah. So there was clip stuff.
That was your idea.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And we did it. So I was, I just didn't want anything to go wrong. And weirdly, things went wrong. But thankfully, you didn't know. We got Jack Black on there and
did not know at all. In fact, I remember my impression of that is that it was actually quite
Anna
a success.
Kendrick. It was fun.
What is the next thing? What I mean, you mentioned this great murder mystery movie you're doing.
I'm going to angle towards directing more. I'm doing some smaller parts in in interesting feature films that won't come out for
like
a
Gone
while.
Girl.
Yeah, that was those kind of things. Yeah. I love the process, Justin, of doing stuff.
Yeah.
I love being in the rehearsal space when no one's around and trying it. I love previews. Yeah. I love tech.
Me too.
I love when there's stunts and I want to do my own stunts and wear the wires. Yeah. I don't want to be in a motorhome or whatever waiting for an AD to knock on the door and say, they're ready for you.
Right.
But
right.
I just, I don't know. I've been very lucky in not being able to just do a singular thing. Well, maybe it's why I like Sleep No More so much, right? Because
of course it's a different...
When you're in that show, you're not... You're doing it. You know, you're living it for a while. And I just think when we can have experiences, whether we're observing them or participating in them, where you're living it.
Yeah.
How fun is that?
Well, and that's what, and again.
I'm obsessed with escape rooms right now.
Oh,
do you
do
the escape
rooms? No, I never have.
Really?
No.
You want to go do one sometime?
Sure. I'd love to.
Oh,
I'd love
to. God, they're so fun.
Yeah. And I have a lot of anxiety about you know, being late for little things, I think it'd give me a tremendous amount of anxiety, but maybe in a fun way.
In such a fun way, because the answers are all around you. So you get to do.
It's like not a big living puzzle, right?
For sure, yeah. And you know that there's all these disparate things and posters and couches and things you're supposed to look under and locks and keys, and it's so fun.
Okay, yeah.
That's how my brain works.
You're still playing. That's what I mean. You are the most playful adult I've ever met, and I'm lucky that I get to talk to you and get to know you. And last thing, this might sound morbid, but the name of the show is Life is Short, and when it ends, what would you want your epitaph to read?
His book was filled with many, many a chapter.
As it already has been.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to have lots of chapters. You don't want it to be a easy reader book.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Let's make up.
Let's do it.
Yeah, not bad.
Not bad.
Well, so this is the part of the show we like to call So That Happened.
So that did happen.
It did happen.
Oh, I forgot to ask him about his asshole. Oh, no, wait, I didn't. But we talked, I think, just enough about assholes.
Disagreed. You were just scratching the surface.
Yeah, so to speak.
Not on yours, on his. Yeah. I wanted to hear more about his immaculate butthole.
Well, Christian said afterwards, we continued the conversation because Neil was genuinely curious about the grooming habits of straight men. And I felt a little uncomfortable representing the whole of straight, the whole of straight men, and I'm now getting self-conscious that maybe I don't groom enough, and I'm also getting really self-conscious that my parents are listening to this. But
he seems so together, and impressive in general as a person.
Yeah,
he's so articulate and economical with his words. Everything about him screams immaculate asshole. You know, his personality and the way his hair is so, he's in such great shape.
His attention to personal detail.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other thing that surprised me, you were talking about how economical he is with his words, how efficient he is. There's something very sharp. There's something, his wit is sharp. His, the way he expresses ideas.
Yeah.
He's very precise. And I don't mean that in like a robotic way, quite the opposite. He's very,
You know what's interesting about him is that he is so open-minded, I think, as a person.
Yeah.
Yet he's so careful with how he says things and the words he chooses. So it's a weird kind of juxtaposition, you know. Usually people who are that careful with what words they choose tend to be a little bit more, I think, uptight maybe, and kind of aware of their image and wanting to present a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he is at all. I think he's very free and open, but yet he's very precise about the words he chooses.
I know. That's an interesting combination.
I was having the same thought. I was like, he never says like. And as I'm thinking this during the interview, he says, oh, sorry, am I saying like too much?
He corrected himself.
Because he said like once.
Yeah, it made me feel like some like Valley Girl. I was like, and that's like totally fine. I also really appreciated that he was honest about his own flaws, that he said that he had kind of watched himself as his mannerisms, his behavior.
He reads reviews.
Reads reviews,
But he was honest about you know, feeling uncomfortable in his body sometimes. When he's on that surprised me. When he's talking about being on a red carpet,
saying that he doesn't do his hands.
If there's anyone that I've ever known who seems like they would never be at all uncomfortable about being on a red carpet, it's him.
But
so that surprised me.
I think that speaks to the fact that nobody, if Neil's not comfortable on a red carpet, I don't think it's possible to be totally uncomfortable unless you're a sociopath. If you're you got to be a psychopath to be comfortable at one of those things.
Yeah.
You know? But thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't get enough Mrs. Doubtfire chat, please stick around after the credits to hear a voice memo of a conversation between me and Christian talking about Mrs. Doubtfire while we were relaxed.
A little Mrs. Doubtfire bookend, if you will.
Ooh, wouldn't that be lovely?
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
Thanks for listening to Life is Short. If you like the show, please give us a 5-star review on Uber and tell your friends to subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, every major listening app. Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long, and is produced by Christian Long, Michelle Lanz, executive produced by Marshall Louie and Hernan Lopez for Wondery. This is such a long introduction, isn't it?
They have too much time to recognize him.
I know. He'd be like,
eventually also like, they'd be like, wait a second. She's like, they're talking about the father. He's in their consciousness and they're looking at
him. I know. And like, oh, you even smell like my husband.
Yeah.
Your breath is just like my husband's.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Once upon a beat! Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.